Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallor, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of, well, October 2018, which means this is the Halloween special. But before we get all creepy and kooky, I just want to say to you guys, you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. Important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator, whether that's a god or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem. You, my friend, are thirsty for knowledge, addicted to wonder. You are an oddball. And here on this show, you are family and we are one. Guys, welcome to the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. This is episode 59. Of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show where it's Halloween all year round. But this is, of course, is a very special episode because, well, it's my favorite month of the year. Kinda. I'll admit, I do like Christmas better than Halloween. And that might sound a little strange to you guys, but, I mean, come on. You know I'm all heart and hardly any scare. Thank you so much for taking the time to download this show. Just want to throw this out there to people. I've gotten some wonderful feedback about the episode I did a while back with William Jevning, the Bigfoot researcher extraordinaire. It's gotten some really, really good hits online. If you guys haven't checked out that episode, I highly, highly, highly recommend you guys check it out. The episode with Thomas Fusco as well has been tearing it up and doing very, very well. I hope you guys have had a chance to check out that show as well. And of course, our last show, Demons and Familiars. This is the time of year, you know, you might want to check that one out too. Just a reminder for anybody who actually hasn't listened to this podcast before, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. And for all my loyal listeners out there, one click is all you need to make you subscribe to me. Thank you so much for taking the time to comment, share, and subscribe to this podcast. It's at this time of year that I need your help the most because, well, suddenly I'm not some weird guy online doing podcasts anymore. I'm the life of the party. This is the month of months. This is Halloween, the scariest time of the year. And, well, it's a good time to be a paranormal podcast, you know, guy or gal. It's so easy to subscribe to the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. We're everywhere. We're absolutely everywhere. You know, most recently, of course, we've managed to secure our spot on Spotify. So, I mean, jump on there, get in there. If you're like me, though, a Podbean kind of guy or gal, open the episode, open it up in the Podbean app. You can comment, like, subscribe. It's basically right there. All you do is scroll down a little tiny bit. If you click down the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, you just hit follow and boom, there you go. You'll get a notification right to your phone when the next episode comes out. And you might want to do that. Want to know why? Because this is Halloween. This is October. I put out bonus episodes this month. And, yeah, There's going to be an amazing episode actually coming out on the 17th. I'm just going to say that right now. A very special day in Canadian history, bud. When we legalize marijuana, I can't think of just one guest I've had on my show before who I've got to have come back in a certain capacity anyway. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. That one I won't be promoting too heavily. It's just for my subscribers. As well, I'm hoping to get another extra episode in before the end of the month. So guys, check it out. This is your monthly podcast. Of course, it comes on the first of the month, but sometimes I do some bonus stuff. So there you go. Now that I got all the business out of the way, blah, 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 get that going. Guys, you're back to school. Halloween season is upon us. But that doesn't mean all the good can't come out of everything that's after happening. Oh my God, September was the best month ever. Hands down for me. I'm so excited to say that only after 2 weeks, I got another placement. Yeah, that's right. I'm on foster child number 3 now. My other foster child is gone away somewhere else for treatment. And now I have another one placed with me. A little baby, only 3 months old. And I'm back to doing what I love to do the most, which is look after little babies. And that child is just an absolute joy and absolutely blessed to have him in my home. And, you know, my kids are thrilled. My wife is over the moon. We're just loving this, and we hope it goes on for as long as possible. That was one dream that came true. And then another dream came true. Oh, my God. Like I mentioned last show, I was going to meet my hero. And my hero, well, y'all know I'm a big wrestling fan. He's Mick Foley, the wrestling legend. Yeah, man, Mr. Hell in a Cell himself, Mrs. Foley's little boy, the double arm DDT-ing, Mr. Socko swinging, super cheapskate, Mick Foley. I was just so blessed to actually have a series of events that took place this month that just, oh, if you ever needed a cosmic pat on the back, I think I got it this September, honest to God. And I'm just going to throw this out there to you guys. This isn't really paranormal podcast related, you know, it's not really Halloween related, but I want to share this with you guys because it was just such a special day, and I think anyone out there could really appreciate this. This is a little bit of a treat before I trick the hell out of you and bring on John Egan later in the show to talk about how, oh, you know, the devil is real and he's coming to take your soul. But before then, a little bit of soul food. My two good friends, Laura and Matt. Of course, you guys know Laura. She is the lady who takes care of the MUFON Minute, which, by the way, this will be the final episode of the MUFON Minute here tonight. As of this show, we will no longer have a MUFON Minute. We're giving Laura a brand new segment, and which should be easy because, well, here's something you don't know. Laura's actually a scientist. Yeah, she's brilliant, and she's going to bring a little section of the show to life. We haven't really decided what the name of it will be, but the MUFON Minute will have one more installment, and that will be tonight, where she'll be reviewing a new movie, actually. Something a little different that has to do with ufology. That's beside the point. Laura and Matt actually took in a Ra. They took in Ra in Toronto a few weeks back. And, you know, they messaged me right away. We're like, you know what, John? Guess what, dude? We're here. We want to buy a shirt. We love you to death. And I was like, man, you can't do that. That's just crazy. But there is one kid that's within my company's umbrella, so to speak, that I go and hang out with every now and then. And, you know, he's got special needs and stuff like that, but he loves wrestling. So his favorite wrestler is Braun Strowman. Braun! And he absolutely loves Braun Strowman. So they sent a t-shirt and a necklace home to me for him. So thank you, Laura. I got to say that online right now. You're just an absolute sweetheart. You've made that guy's day. And mine, too, because they sent me a Daniel Bryan towel. Yes, 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 Daniel Bryan towel. And it says Fight for Your Dreams on it. And it's hanging here right now in the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast closet. I'm so happy to have that. But anyway, I actually got to go pick this kid up and surprise him. Give him the Braun Strowman shirt, give him the necklace, and then look at him and say, you know, you watched a pay-per-view last Sunday where Mick Foley was the referee for the main event between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. And, well, we're going to go meet him. We had a meet and greet with the legendary Mick Foley. I got in a car. I picked him up. We went to the historic CLB Army, where I have captured many professional heavyweight wrestling titles myself. Two, actually, and a tag team title once upon a time as well. But that's beside the point. We go into CLB Armory, and, you know, he puts on this amazing show. He's obviously exhausted. This is the last stop on a cross-Canada tour. Like, he is absolutely wasted. Plus, he did WWE TV. Plus, he did a pay-per-view in the last 2 weeks. Mick is exhausted. And we are the last in line to meet Mick Foley. And when the kid went up that I look after, and I can't say his name, obviously, on the podcast, I'll lose my job. But when he went up to meet Mick Foley, Mick Foley just was all smiles. He knew exactly what was going on. He knew he was a special needs child and just came right to life, was incredibly cordial, signed his championship belt. And, of course, at this stage, I'm standing there going, oh, my God, I'm about to meet my hero, the guy whose posters were all over my wall as a kid. And, you know, I can't think of anything more Halloween-y than Hell in a Cell, where this guy got thrown off and nearly died. Like, but who else? The Undertaker. The most Halloween-ish gimmick of all time. This is just an awesome story. But anyway, I go up and, you know, I guess it's because I wrestled and I kind of get the feel for wrestlers. I had no fear at all meeting Mick Foley. It wasn't even nerves. I actually went up and put my arm around him and said, hey, Mick, it's great to meet you. Do you mind signing this right here? And I gave him the towel, and he signed the Daniel Bryan towel for me, and he laughed. And when I put my arm around him, he actually looked at me and giggled a little bit, and he said, I'm cool with this. And he raised his eyebrows all sexual-like, and he said, but you got to keep those eyes to yourself. This guy, completely exhausted, probably hasn't slept in like 2 months, and he still makes me laugh my head off. What a moment. And, you know, we walk out of the CLB Armory. We look down at the, we look down at the things we got autographed. And me and the kid look at each other and just say, wow, what a dream come true for the both of us. And, it was just such a special moment. And, you know, what can I say? I like to think that karma is going to give me lots and lots of blessings for what I do in life. Let me tell you, I got to meet my hero this week, this month, so you can't top that. You really can't. Anyway, I really hope for all my listeners out there that you guys don't listen to that adage that people say, don't meet your heroes. Like, please, please do go meet your heroes. Just make sure they're good people and generous like Mick Foley, who is just well known around the world for his charity work, actually. And with that, I say, have a nice day! Now, on with the show. We got an awesome show. This is our Halloween special. I'm pretty excited. And I mean, we have to dig in with some very special Halloween-themed paranormal news first, right? Blah. Welcome to my podcast. I'm Count Johnny Law. And, you know, the first story is going to be about the Count, unfortunately. There is a growing body of evidence to suggest that young blood... Yeah, that's right. Young blood can help to treat age-related diseases. See, the vampires had it all figured out. According to Dame Linda Patridge, a leading geneticist at University College London, the idea of using transfusions of young blood to keep elderly people healthy for longer has substantial merit. Research has shown that while such transfusions cannot stop the aging process, they do have the potential to stave off diseases such as cancer, heart disease, and dementia in older patients. The method has been the subject of numerous trials and experiments over the last few years. One startup company, Ambrosia, yeah, I like that name. That's actually cool for a blood company, is even offering transfusions to its customers for, get this, $8,000. It's in you to give. Give it all to me. More work needs to be done, however, to identify the specific molecules responsible for these benefits. Identification of these is a high priority of research, Professor Partridge and her colleagues wrote. The practical accessibility of both the human microbiome and blood systems makes therapeutic manipulation a particularly attractive approach, but research in animals is needed to establish the long-term consequences and possible side effects. Because, you know, you might turn into a freaking bat. You know, turning into a bat's always fun. You know, you just fly around up the sky and stuff. I can see it now. Oh, God, I've been smoking for 50 years. Is there anything I do for these bags under my eyes? Oh, yes. I go get myself a bag of that plasma. I see the old lady, like, hook herself up, and then, like, 2 days later, she's hanging upside down, like, in her closet and stuff. what? You didn't think that was funny? I didn't get through to you? Well, you know what? You should be, why can't you be more like the city, huh? Why can't you be more like SETI? You know what SETI is, don't you? It's that deep space thing that kind of picks up, you know, words from aliens, apparently. Well, guess what? SETI picks up 72 signals from a distant galaxy. How's this for a creepy story? Astronomers discovered the signals after analyzing 400 terabytes of radio data using an artificial intelligence known as fast radio bursts. The signals are powerful bursts of radio waves that, despite lasting mere milliseconds, generate as much energy as the sun does an entire day. Their galaxy of origin is approximately 3 billion light years from Earth. Some scientists have suggested that these mysterious bursts are produced when two neutron stars collide, while others maintain that young, rapidly rotating neutron stars are to blame. It has been suggested that some form and events alien technology could be responsible. What do you think? Do you think is E.T. trying to call home? Or, you know, is he like doing the party line thing? Because this sounds powerful. Maybe he got like four or five E.T.s, you know, they're all eating Reese's Pieces and trying to call home. The discovery of these latest bursts, which is achieved by researchers of the University of California, Berkeley, involved training a special AI algorithm to replicate the manual processes traditionally used by scientists to detect the phenomenon. Oh, God. So it wasn't even a person who picked it up this time and wrote it down, you know? This wasn't a wow thing on a piece of paper. This was actually a robot. Applying these techniques in the search of evidence of ET technologies or technosignatures is incredibly compelling, together with addressing the tantalizing phenomena of FRB, which is actually the name of the planet 3 billion light years away. Oh my God. Oh my God. That is really, really exciting. You know, 72? I don't know, man. I just think, you know, like, we're probably picking up Rocket Raccoon trying to fire up that big thing so Thor can get his hammer made. Like, seriously. Okay, like, one of my childhood memories from Halloween is me and my sister with that cheap dollar store fake spiderweb stuff, you know, with the cheesy spiders you use, and people used to wear them as rings, but they're really not rings, they're just used to hold the spider stuff up, and yada, yada, yada. But anyway, this just stuck in my head forever, and I gotta refrain myself from buying it every single year, because I got too many babies in the house these days, scared that they might choke on it. So, like, when I seen this story, that's all I thought about, you know, when I read stories about thousand-foot-long spider webs cover the edge of a Greek lagoon. Yeah. How's that for decoration? A vast stretch of vegetation next to Itoko Lagoon has become hidden beneath a huge mass of spider silk. The disturbing scene, which looks like something straight out of a horror movie, was captured on camera recently by local photographer Giannis Giannakopoulos. And hey, I got that on the first try, by the way. I know, I'm getting better. This is like the fourth or fifth Halloween we've done this. He described the spectacle as strange and unprecedented. According to experts, the arachnids, which number in the thousands, are the genus Tetranatha. They are notorious for building huge webs during particularly humid conditions. Yeesh, it was so humid in Newfoundland this year. I'm surprised they're heading in my step. It is as if the spiders are taking advantage of these conditions and are having a kind of a party, said Professor Maria Chatsky of the Demetrius University of Thrace in Camontini. They reproduce and provide a whole new generation. Yeah, sounds like a lot of college parties I was to during Halloween when I was younger. There are huge numbers of male and female spiders mating. The spiders will have their party and will soon die, leaving behind the creepy, creepy Lake Long Halloween decoration. Yeah. Oh, God. Anyways, give that spider the freaking Halloween King crown for being so creepy. And speaking of the crown, what if I told you that Helena Bonham Carter hired a psychic to contact the late Princess Margaret for advice on her latest TV role? Well, you know her. She's on The Crown. Yeah, that TV show. The actress, whose roles include the villainous Bellatrix Lestrange in the Harry Potter franchise, most recently landed the part of the late royal in the award-winning historical drama The Crown. While the 52-year-old has played a member of the royal family before the king's speech, this time she decided to seek the advice of someone with first-hand experience, Princess Margaret herself, through the services of a psychic medium. She always likes to research her roles with as much depth as possible, Did I say death? Must be the Halloween vibe. With as much depth as possible, and is always prepared to go the extra mile, said a TV insider. So that means using someone with supernatural powers to speak to a character who is now on the other side, then Helena has no problems with doing that. According to reports, Carter was told by Princess Margaret that she was doing a great job. Jeez. Oh, my God. I wonder if they have award shows over on the other side. Seriously. I can see her getting called up for a reward. Yes, and now, you know, we're going to give the award for best villain for playing Bellatrix Lestrange in the Harry Potter franchise. The winner of the award is Helena Bonham. And, like, the whole crowd of ghosts just go, boo, boo. I was in a real dilemma about the role, she said at the time. I asked a psychic, I'm completely wacko, who was actually de-ghosting her house. There you go. You're not a crackpot this time of year, love. You're just another ghost story. Oh, man. You know, it makes sense. Many people say that hauntings are caused by, you guessed it, souls of people who haven't crossed over. And it makes sense that, you know, where they kind of died or somewhere close to there where they would haunt, right? Well, wouldn't that mean, like, roads all over the world be haunted then? A psychic is investigating a haunted motorway, is my next story. One stretch of the N6 motorway in England has gained something of a haunted reputation in recent years. The area, which covers junctions 16 to 19, has seen so many accidents and accounts of paranormal phenomena that some have come to refer it as Cheshire's own Bermuda Triangle. In addition to being a particularly nasty accident black spot, this particular stretch of road has also had some strange sightings of Roman soldiers, phantom hitchhikers, and vanishing vehicles. Psychic Mike Brooker, who has been investigating stories and accounts from the M6 for years, said this, I'm investigating this and I need people to give me whatever evidence they have, sightings or experiences or even strange occurrences, he said. I'm leaning towards the theory that it can be connected to Saxon involvement. There are reports of a Roman burial ground, and that there was a historic clash between Scottish and English armies in the area. There are so many variables and possibilities, though, it's hard to pinpoint. While road authorities have been taking steps to improve the road to help prevent further accidents, Brooker remains adamant that the explanation for the black spot is supernatural in nature. And not the TV show. Definitely not the TV show. To date, they have no explanation whatsoever. It hasn't stopped and needs stopping, he said. Natural explanations such as tire blowouts, mechanical faults, distracted drivers don't cover the whole breadth of this. This is something inexplicable. There are ghosts here. How about that? Ooh, boy. Get in your car. Have a drive through England. England's creepy anyway, man. So creepy. On to Peru we go for our next story. Ouija board spooks. Ouija board sparks hysteria at a school in Peru is our next one. A group of around 30 students was left terrified after a Ouija board session at their school went horribly wrong. According to reports, the incident occurred after a teacher's daughter at San Joe de Samarino boarding school in Peru's Loreto region brought a Ouija board and book of black magic into class. After she managed to convince her fellow students to participate, the situation soon deteriorated into mass hysteria, with at least one student ending up convulsing and screaming on the floor. When a teacher arrived to see what was going on, they found several of the students lying on the ground, many of them incoherent and suffering from spasms. The incident prompted panicked parents to take their children to local evangelical churches, believing that they had become possessed by whatever had been summoning during the session. Oh my God, when I went to school, all I had to worry about was math. The school ended up being closed for a week. Bonus. But as has since been reopened. Guys, just a crazy amount of news. We have real life vampires sucking your blood to live longer. We have SETI picking up, you know, like 72, hopefully ETs trying to call home. We have, you know, those Halloween decorations that, oh my God, do you think that's where they actually come from? Those spider webs, that big lake? Yeesh. We have the crown star, Helena Bonham Carter, who actually hired a psychic to contact the late Princess Margaret for her casting role. We have a psychic who's investigating a haunted motorway in England, and a Ouija board that sparked so much terror it actually caused a hysteria in a classroom. Guys, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland. You like that? Odd. Yeah. I'll just stop.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for October 2018. Happy Halloween, boys and ghouls. There has been a lot of hype this past month about the debut of the new documentary, Hunt for the Skinwalker, from Jeremy Corbell. I will open by saying that I haven't read the original book of the same name by Dr. Colm Kelleher and the illustrious George Knapp, someone you may remember who broke Bob Lazar's story about working at Area 51. I have listened to several interviews with Mr. Knapp and have watched other documentaries about the Skinwalker Ranch and surrounding areas, but, you know, hey, grad school, it takes up a lot of time, right? So the buzz on the Facebook site for the documentary goes like so. Last year, the world learned about the Pentagon's secret study of UFOs from the New York Times. $22 million was spent to investigate so-called flying saucers. But the real story is much larger. There wasn't just one UFO study. There were two! The Pentagon's other, larger investigation delved into mysteries far more profound, far more disturbing than alleged alien aircraft. Its focus was a living laboratory and paranormal hotspot known as Skinwalker Ranch. Based on the best-selling book by George Knapp and Dr. Colm Kelleher, Hunt for the Skinwalker investigates the confidential, most extensive scientific study of a paranormal hotspot in human history. Skinwalker Ranch in Utah is famous throughout the world because of the myriad of frightening, seemingly supernatural events that have been reported in the scenic basin surrounding the property for hundreds of years. Sightings include orbs, UFOs, animal mutilations, unknown creatures, poltergeist-type activity, and many other inexplicable incidents. An exhaustive, multidisciplinary scientific team began in 1996, spearheaded by the enigmatic Las Vegas billionaire. A PhD-level team of investigators was deployed to collect evidence and spent more than a decade on the ground interviewing witnesses, searching for explanations, and directly confronting an unknown intelligence. Recent headlines have revealed that a second government-funded but confidential study was initiated by the Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA. This second investigation was designed to determine if the phenomena at the ranch might have national security implications or could point to technological breakthroughs. The shroud of mystery hanging above Skinwalker Ranch and the Uinta Basin has fascinated director Jeremy Corbell for years. He finally journeyed to the property to interview eyewitnesses, including the new owner of the ranch, and uncover rare, previously unreleased recordings. So, overall, that was a pretty good hype backstory. The cinematography was gorgeous. I really love the style of this film. I enjoyed the eerie vibes, and as a fan of Twin Peaks and the podcast Welcome to Night Vale, Corbell really sets a bleak landscape for the events. The first-hand interviews with the witnesses are always my personal favorite in any of these documentaries. These segments can make or break your story. In this case, meeting with local indigenous people, hearing their stories of lights and subsequent illnesses, and seeing ships, also the terror inflicted by mutilated cattle, truly had me reeling. Well done to the interviewers who treated the witnesses with compassion and allowed them to tell their genuine stories while showing their true emotions. As a whole, I will be honest in saying that I was hoping for a bit more, and some new stories. It was nice to see Knapp's content that was previously locked away from the public. It was pretty interesting. But some of the info wasn't that dissimilar to items that I had already seen. In fact, I think there was a relatively new episode of Ghost Adventures, known in my personal home as The Ghost Bros, Dude, that also does a nice job interviewing the local residents and indigenous groups about their traditions, their oral history, and their experiences. One of my favorite stories shared was about an orangey hole in the sky that looked like it opened up into another sky and behind it. Another story was of a dark creature crawling its way through a very similar type hole, so kind of a multi-dimensional portal, if you will. For all the scientific talk that was going on in this documentary, they really didn't show any hard facts. We see a lot of scientists saying, no, really, trust us. It really didn't sit well with me. I know that I'm very much more of a quantitative data gal, and I do accept the value of qualitative studies and research, but come on, so many years, so many different outposts, so many radars and cameras, you got nothing heard, nothing charted, or, you know, a table of data to show me just for a couple of seconds. I know it's not a sexy title or a sexy topic in a documentary, but please, a little more science, if you will. Overall, I feel bad by saying this, but I do remain skeptical of Knapp, particularly at the end of the film. He throws around a lot of alphabet soup government agencies and thinly veiled allusions to other projects that remains hidden. In a recent interview with Alejandro Rojas for Open Minds Radio, he stresses how involved he is with lots of things he can't talk about. He remains insistent that no one stands to gain from these studies and general work. He says there is no agenda. I declare poo-poo on that. Everyone has an agenda. Maybe they are benign. Maybe they are nefarious. But we all have agendas. We have goals that guide our life, that guide our worth, that guide our personal lives. So let's not be naive to think that a multimillionaire isn't doing research at the ranch purely for funsies. I know science has a long way to go in this particular area, but there is a big move for researchers to declare any potential conflicts of interest. I mean, I'm not big into the world of ultra-top secret projects, so clearly I might be missing something, but being open about your, quote, agenda or interest or whatever is important, I think most critical thinkers will know that you have one. If you say that you don't, they're immediately going to discredit you or assume you're being dishonest. Also, Robbie Williams, Mr. Rock DJ himself, is actually featured at the ranch, so that's something. And remember to keep your eyes to the skies. If you see something interesting, be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. Thanks, John.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
Thanks, John, and greetings from Betty, your oracle, with 5 minutes of wisdom for your consideration and enjoyment. Today's topic is part two of our series on the soul. And the question for today's topic is, do all souls originate on Earth? I personally have been practicing a modality called soul guidance for over 3 years now, and I just counted up some of the readings that I've done. I stopped counting at 100, and from all of those readings I've done, I have not found one soul that originated on Earth. As we talked about in our last series on the last show last month. The question asked was, do all people have souls? And of course, yes. The answer to that is undeniably, yes, we all have souls. And I talked about the origination of the soul being sound before light. We are light bodies as humans souls having a human experience. We, as I said, originated from sound, then light. But where did all of this origination start? Well, with soul guidance, that's one of the things we determine. What planetary system you came from. And as souls walking this three-dimensional planet, this and the third dimension where we are, where most of us are ascending from, third dimension is very heavy, it's very dense, it's the everyday things that we do, driving our car, cleaning our houses, going to work, making money, you know, using and money being an energy that pays our bills, that gets us through this thing we call life every month, every day, every waking minute. But it's our soul that does all of this. We didn't originate from Earth. Well, then, that presents a whole other series of questions. Because if we didn't originate on Earth, where did we come from? That's one of the things that I can tap into as doing this modality of soul guidance. We can take you to whatever planetary system you came from. We also find out, what is your soul purpose? Why did you come here? There are things we talk about, not even in soul guidance. Lots of us sit down and have these conversations daily. Did I really actually sign a contract before I came to this planet to do these things, to go through all of this? And a lot of my friends, a lot of my peers, because we attract the people who we need in our lives, most of my friends know that when we sit down and we have a conversation about souls, it's going to be an interesting conversation. Simply because, well, because I came from planet X, planet Y, planet Z, these are some of my soul traits. These are some of the things that I've contracted to do. Really? Did I really sign a contract that said I'm going to have that car accident? That I'm going to end up with this illness, with this husband, with this set of circumstances in my life? And I can tell you that, yeah, you know what? We did. We signed a contract that said, darn it, these are some of the things. These are lessons we need to learn in this lifetime. And our souls help us through that. Our souls will bring us to the people we need in our lives and the situations we need in our lives. For more information on all of this, you can go to my website. I've got a website under construction. My Facebook page, Betty Collins, my business Facebook page, Betty Collins eFactor, my YouTube channel. You can also email me at bettyscottcollinsnlp@gmail.com, bettyscottcollinsnlp@gmail.com. For more information, I have lots of information there and love sharing it with all of you. Stay tuned next month for our next exciting topic from Wisdom of the Oracle. Back to you, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Hey guys, welcome to Oddities, your Halloween oddities. Come on now.
You know what oddities are. They're strange facts that are true about an odd, odd world. And what can I say? The Exorcist, okay? The movie The Exorcist. This is what I think about during Halloween. This is the quintessential Halloween movie next to Ghostbusters. Everybody loves it. Many people watch it this time of year. It's like a little tradition. You know what? I like The Nightmare Before Christmas, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty happy. There's lots of happy songs and stuff going on there. Like, Exorcist is a mind, well, you know, I can't drop the F-bomb. I'm not allowed to swear on the show. So, you know what I did? I know, I've heard from a few friends that The Exorcist and the people who filmed it and created the show and the movie have had just incredible stories of paranormal phenomena happening during the filming of that film. And this is no joke. I actually researched this a lot, and there's like a lot of crazy stuff that happened during the filming, and also like some of the things that went on during the day of it. Like, this is just insane. So once I gathered some of it together, I thought this would make a really cool version of oddities for Halloween. Creepy things that happen on the set of The Exorcist. And before I dig in, The Exorcist actually came out 45 years ago, and it came out the year my mother and father got married. So there you go. It's my mother and father's 45th wedding anniversary. Happy anniversary, you guys. And Dad, don't make Mom too mad, because you never know when her head might spin around and she might start barfing all over the walls. Let's talk about weird stuff that happened on the set of The Exorcist right now. The first thing that happened was an unexplained fire. The first set of this film had caught on fire. Everything on the set except for Regan's room, where most of the exorcism scenes were to be shot, was still intact. Due to this unexpected fire, the shooting of this film was delayed for 6 weeks. Ellen Burstyn's permanent spine injury is the next thing. While shooting one of the scenes in the film, Ellen got severely injured due to a random malfunctioning of her harness. In that scene, she got pulled too quickly and landed herself on the Cossacks with a great impact, which caused a permanent spinal injury. The screech that you hear in that scene is pure pain and very real. There were 9 deaths. 2 actors, Velisic Melarios and Jack McGowan, who were scripted to die in the film, also died in real life during the post-production stage of the film. Apart from that, 7 other people associated with the cast and members of the crew died due to natural or unexplained causes before the release of the film. Holy God, think about that. There's such a short amount of time. It's like, what, they open up Tutankhamun's tomb or something? Like, this is nuts. A warning or a sign is the next one. Jason Miller, who played Father Kairos in the film, was approached by a priest on the street. The priest gave him a medallion and said this to him: "Reveal the devil for the trickster that he is. He will seek retribution against you, or he will even try to stop what you are trying to do to unmask him." Just lovely. Linda Blair's actual mental breakdown. I mean, it's just iconic to see Linda Blair's head spinning around, screaming, "Oh my God, what an incredible film." Linda's character in the film was absolutely intense, and she had to be in that mind frame to portray that character the whole time. All of that got to her. It got to her so much that it was rumored that she started having nervous breakdowns while filming The Exorcist. Here's another one, Rome screaming. The first time the film was screened at Rome, it was at a theater located between 2 churches. On the day of the screening, there was a torrential rain and a lightning storm brewing in the background to create that haunting effect. One of the 400-year-old crosses was also struck by the lightning, and it fell right into the middle of the piazza. This, what is the chances of that even happening? That's insane. You guys know The Exorcist is actually based on a book called, well, The Exorcist. While writing the book, the presence of the darkness was so strong that Blatty, who wrote the book, and while writing the book, experienced strange and supernatural activities, such as things randomly levitating in the air. Was it late night writing or stress? None of us could explain it, but if you see a pattern, it has to mean something, doesn't it? My merciful... Just... What an insane... Like, this is nuts. That's all the stuff that happened on the set of The Exorcist? Man, I love oddities. I gotta keep doing this. This was great. Guys, our guest is gonna tell you all about the devil and why he's real and why he's gonna get your soul if you don't do something about it. John Egan joins us very, very soon. Don't you dare go away.
A Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Happy Halloween, guys. You know I got to get a good guest on tonight, right? Well, how about somebody who's been on like every single radio station there is? Wow. This guy's got quite the story. And when I think of Halloween, I think, you know, your classic goose and gulls going door to door. But I mean, who out there hasn't dressed up as the devil for Halloween? I got some good news and I got some bad news. The good news is great choice of costume because the devil is very, very real. But unfortunately, according to this guy, he's plotting to get your soul and will succeed with many. Will you be one of the many? I hope not. Thank God we've got John Egan on tonight at the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. John, how are you doing?
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It's an honor to be here. I'm doing great.
I'm so happy to have you on as my guest. I will say, though, we're going to dig into some very, very, heavy material tonight. This podcast will not be for the faint of heart. But before we That's get into true. The raw, just insane story you got to tell us, because some of the things I've heard from you already have just been blowing my mind since I've been researching you. It's just unreal. But you are a regular person. This is the next kid
That's right.
all this stuff. A man who's had a very...
That's the thing. That's
a... Yeah, very, very, unextraordinary life leading up into this. So please, John, let's start in with that because the fact that this could really happen to anybody is a cautionary tale. And I hope tonight we might be able to help some people. So take it away, John.
Well, I think so. So yeah, Jonathan, you know, every time I hear of an encounter that a person has with a ghost or an angel or a demon, I wonder about that person a little bit. I'm a little bit skeptical myself. I wonder if he or she is a legitimate person. Are they a little crazy? Are they doing this for attention? That's why I want to give you a brief history about my life and who I am. You know, by this apparition I had, a small veil was lifted for a moment in time where I was able to peer in through a dimension unseen by most people. I could actually see through a threshold into a paranormal realm. You know, we're all going to be faced with this dimension someday, that fifth dimension. No matter what you do, no matter where you live, no matter how you live, in the end, we're all going to be standing on the precipice of that event horizon of that fifth dimension. And I'm not just talking to you, Jonathan, or just a few of you listeners. I'm talking to everybody out there. Everybody out there is going to be thrust into this abyss. But there's going to be forces for some, and I'm afraid for many, evil forces. They're going to have to contend with. So tonight, we will get an understanding of those evil forces and how they will try to manipulate you in that paranormal realm of the fifth dimension. I think your listeners are going to be enlightened a lot on a deep level, more than they can possibly imagine right now. And it's quite frightening, so be prepared. This apparition I had is the antithesis of any apparition I've ever heard or read about, and we're going to get into that too. But I mean, just think about it. Jonathan, how many times in the course of history does an entity break through a dimension to deliver a message? I could probably count them on my right hand alone. When people read the Bible, excuse me?
There hasn't been a whole lot of documented stuff. I was just about to say the Bible, though, would probably be a number one source that most people would be familiar with.
Yeah, right. So when you read the Bible, I mean, there's occurrences where angels have brought messages to people, but there's not much about devils delivering messages to people. There's plenty of stories about ghosts everywhere, scaring people or haunting houses. We've all heard a lot of stories about ghosts. But tonight, I ask your listeners to be open-minded, be ready. They might not sleep that well tonight. You may even have bad dreams. That's what people tell me. It's terrifying, jarring. This is the only book I think written that will take you as close as humanly possible right into the devil's realm. It's going to be a little frightening, and that much I can guarantee.
Well, no, I'm all about the Halloween spookies, but there you go, guys. You are warned. You are forewarned right now by John Egan. This will not be for the faint of heart.
Right. And I'm not a crazy person looking for for attention. I was given a few talents in my life that got me a lot of attention. I'm a best-selling author. I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about that at all, but I'm an artist whose work has been seen throughout the world, too. I hope we have a chance to talk about that. But the only reason why I bring that up is because I have the ability to paint and draw exactly what I see right down to every detail. So just so you have like a visual of this apparition and what it looked like when it appeared to me in my house, people can go to John-Egan, EAGAN.com, and they can see the actual apparition of exactly what I saw. The cover of the book, that's exactly what I saw. So you might need a visual when we're talking about this, so it'll help out a lot.
I actually checked out the website earlier, John, and it was a beautiful little website. I love it. In fact, I went on there and was very curious about the picture. I said, my God, that's so creepy looking. And as soon as I scrolled over it, lo and behold, it actually expands and scared the life out of me. So you guys are going to love this. You guys are going to love this website. That's www.john-egan.com, JohnEagan.com. Go check it out right now.
Yeah. Right. So real quick, I was born in Brooklyn. Back in the day, I went to parochial school, all boys parochial school. Franciscan brothers were in charge. They were very strict people. You know, we'd play in the playground in the morning, and then if a Franciscan brother would come out and blow the whistle, and everybody had to stop cold. You know, all you would hear is like basketballs bouncing around. You couldn't touch them. If you went to touch them, then it's going to be tough on you because a Franciscan brother's going to beat you. When you got home, your mom was going to beat you, so you just couldn't win. We just marched into school like good soldiers, you know. So that's how I started my life, you know, and everybody back then, they all went to church. Your mom and dad stayed together. You didn't have to worry about that, you know. There was no internet, just a bunch of kids playing outside, you know, hanging out with each other. Just to show you how things changed, real fast, I did a study 20 years ago, and they asked people, how many intimate friends do you think you have? They said 3. They did that study today, asked them, how many intimate friends do you have, you know, with Facebook and Snapchat and LinkedIn and all that other stuff? You got 500 friends on every app, and intimate friends is down to 1.5 now. So I don't know what's going on. We have global communication nowadays and thousands of friends, but it's half of what it used to be. So that's a shame. You know, I don't know about that. And now suicide rate among boys have doubled. Suicide rate among girls have tripled. It's like a neutron bomb. You know, it doesn't make a big explosion, but the neutrons go through the buildings and through the armor and through the ground, and it kills everything from the inside. So I kind of think that might be what's going on here. I'm not sure, though. But anyway, my dad moves us to New Jersey. I go to the college in New Jersey. That's where I got my degrees. So real fast, I become a special ed teacher. I mean, I had to work with these children, didn't have any attributes that most other kids had. I felt sorry for them. That's when I kind of felt felt like special. I felt like I had to pay back for just being normal because I worked with these poor kids every day. I even had kids that had like these terrible cancers, and they would like, I'd give them coloring books and they would kind of draw, but they had such terrible cancers in their jaw. They would drool and you had to clean that up. But I had teacher's aides in the room and they would help me out with that. But I had a lot of time on my hands because they had like 2-hour lunches. There wasn't any papers to correct. So I started working at night as a bartender. But that's what I think was a prerequisite for why this creature came to my house. I worked as a bartender, but most people out there, they're good people. But there's a lot of people like on the dark side out there. They were looking for more than just having fun. You know, looking for alcohol, of course, drugs, you know, any kind of thing they can get their hands on. And these people who live like that over the time, they died. And they died from like accidents, car accidents, overdoses, suicide, cancers. And I felt terrible for these people because a lot of these people were like atheists. They didn't care about God. They just wanted to have fun. And I felt like helpless for these people. Just real quick, I had a friend who was a bartender too with me. He worked with me for about a year or so. He was a young guy. He smoked and drank so much at night. He always made fun of God. He always made fun of Jesus. He always made fun of Virgin Mary. He didn't believe in any religion. He never went to, never went to church. He didn't feel good. He went to the doctor. He found out he had 4th-degree cancer. He died within like a month. He aged like 40 years in a month. I used to visit him a couple of times, but it wasn't very long that he died. But I felt, again, helpless for this guy. So I never thought, how is this guy going to deal with that in that fifth dimension when we pass on? So I would pray every day. So I had a pretty good prayer life. And I would pray to God and say, you know, these people that I know who died, not really in a great way, let me pray for their souls. Don't send them to hell until I finish praying for their souls. So that's what I would do every day. And I would meditate for an hour and a half every day. But and in the meantime, I wrote a best-selling book back then. That helped me to retire. I didn't have to teach the kids anymore, which I really loved those kids. I missed them. I didn't have to bartend anymore, so I kind of stopped doing that. So I kind of lived pretty good life. I had all the time in the world, and I would meditate every single day for like an hour and a half. And that's how I think why this creature came to my house. So if you want, we can start, and I can start to tell you what exactly how this whole thing happened.
Between love and hate, the devil is real. I mean, when I think of a title for really anything, very, very catchy, but also a little startling. Between love and hate, the devil is real. He is plotting to get your soul and will succeed with many. Well, let me tell you, that's one heck of a title for a book. I want everybody, all my listeners out there, to give this guy a chance. Jump on Amazon. I believe it's available on, correct?
Well, yeah, well, the only thing about Amazon is when you sell a lot of books like I do, people come to you where you're selling your book and they sell it for half, you know, one third the price, one quarter of the price. So I got like the other books that I've written is thousands of people. They're selling it for a fraction of the cost. So I'm not that crazy about Amazon. So right now I'm just sticking with John-Eagan.com. That's where the 350-page ebook is. That's where you'll see the cover of the book, and you'll see exactly what I saw. And I'm going to try to explain all of that now. A lot of this stuff is unfathomable, but we're going to discuss it, and it's going to be interesting.
And I always tell people too, you know, you'll be able to see the cover of this book in the podcasting art. Chances are, anybody who sees this podcast right now, there'll be a nice little picture in the background. I make one for all my guests, and of course, I got to have this chilling picture of the devil himself. Anyway, John, how did you get to know this guy? Yeah. What happened? You were talking about bartending.
So, Jonathan, as I was saying, everything is going fine. I'm retired as a young guy, right? I have three boys, though. I have a wife and three boys. I live in New Jersey. I have a nice house on an acre of property. I want to explain the house to you so you can understand what actually happened there. So I have an acre of property, I have three boys. So two of them already went to college and moved out. My house you come in, the garages are under the house and the basement is under the house. I had the basement finished off, and then I cut it in half and made an apartment down there, because as my boys were getting older, they wanted to have their own way in and you know, just kind of hang out by themselves down there. So, you know, they could come into the garage, park in the garage, and go into the apartment. So that's what I have downstairs. And upstairs I have, like most people have, has a kitchen and a living room, and there's other, you know, bedrooms in the back. So one day, Jonathan, I'm sitting. Everything's fine. I mean, everything's just going fine for me. And I'm sitting, you know, as I said earlier, I pray for these souls every single day. So I'm sitting on my sectional couch. Most people have a sectional couch. And just out of nowhere, the basement door downstairs is a metal door between the garage and the basement. So you can almost hear that door close, you know, from upstairs. So this one day, just I hear the door slam like I've never been slammed before. So I'm thinking to myself, I don't even think my wife could even slam that door that hard if she was that mad. I don't know. My son never gets that mad. I mean, I think he might be able to slam that door that hard if he had like a car accident or he broke up with his girlfriend or something. So I get up off my couch. I go through the kitchen. There's a kitchen there. And I look down the steps into the basement. And usually when my son comes home, he starts turning on the lights. So there's no lights on down there. So I'm thinking, okay. So I put the lights on. I go downstairs. I look at that metal door. It seems fine. I look everywhere in that basement. I go into his apartment. I look in his closet under his bed. I look in the furnace room. I'm convinced there's nobody down there, but I feel, Jonathan, I feel this menacing, sinister, like ominous, this, I don't know how to explain it other than evil. Like I felt an evil presence. So I'm like not sure about any of this. So I go upstairs. I sit down again. And I'm sitting for a while. Then there's wooden steps from the basement to the kitchen. And I hear something like about, that seems like about 300 pounds. Because I know what it sounds like when my wife comes up. I know what it sounds like when my son is walking up and down there. But this thing is slowly crushing those steps, like one at a time. And I hear it's coming up. And I get up off the sectional couch again. I kind of know what this might be, but I'm not even going to go there in my mind. So I go over there, look down the steps. There's nobody there. So I'm saying, oh boy, this is weird. This is really weird. And I still have this feeling of this evil presence, this inauspicious, like threatening presence that was in the house. So I sit down again and I don't say anything. I don't do anything. I'm a little off kilter. So my wife comes home. The first thing she says to me is, this house feels weird. She goes to me. And I didn't want to say anything to her. And she said, there's something wrong with this house. There's something, I feel like an evil presence is in this house. He goes, you okay? Because I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to scare her. So I didn't say anything about it. So now I didn't notice at the time these creatures have like a methodology. They have a way of telling you that they're here. Like when he first started to do that, he was telling me he's possessing this house. He's not coming, like, this is not a social call. He's not passing through. He's here, present in this house, and I have to, you know, worry about that. So now I'm sitting there with my wife, and she starts hearing that this thing crushing the steps, coming up the steps. And she says to me, is it Johnny home? I go, I don't know, Lillian. She goes, yells, Johnny, is that you? So she gets off the couch. He goes, there's nobody on those steps. She said, you heard those somebody walking on that step, right? And I said, yes, I did. Well, what is it? She goes, and what's wrong with this house? Is something wrong now? And I go, I really don't know, because I didn't want to frighten her. You know, Jonathan, I didn't know. I really did not know at that time. I didn't know this thing was working through. It's this methodology I was talking about. So, okay. So now we're there. This time now, this is going over like a couple of weeks. Now, when you go into your bedroom, you think, oh, so I go into, when I first heard that, I go into the office. I have a camera system, a security camera system there. So I look out onto the property. Nobody was on the property. I look at the garage doors where they bring your car in. Nobody, those doors didn't open. I look at the back door where you can come in through the garage and just walk in the door. That door didn't open. So I know nobody was on the property. But I know somebody's in this house now. Not a person, though. I knew that wasn't a person. For sure I knew that, because I checked everywhere in the basement where anybody could hide. So sometimes at night, now this is going on for a couple of weeks before I actually had the apparition. You go in your bedroom at night, Jonathan, you sleep, and they turn off all the lights. You're supposed to feel secure, right? So in the middle of the night, this thing was breathing like a water buffalo. Like, it's so deeply breathing, would wake me up and would wake my wife up. And she would turn on the light and she'd go, what is that? She would say to me. And I didn't want to tell her what I thought it was. And she says, this is really weird. You know, you're going to have to probably do something about this. But there's nothing I knew what to do about it. So anyway, it goes on like that for a couple of weeks. So I have a beach house. We have a beach house. It was the last year in the summer. So on the weekends, we still go down to the beach house and some family people meet me there. And my son sometimes comes down with his girlfriend, but he stayed home this one weekend. And he calls down to the beach house and he calls my wife, Lily, and he goes to her, are you guys down at the beach house? And we go, yeah, both of you. And we go, yeah. Well, something's in this house, he goes. And he goes, when I'm in my apartment downstairs, I hear something really heavy walking across the floor. When I come upstairs to investigate, I hear it downstairs, slamming my door from my apartment. He hears a glass closet door down. He hears it rolling back and forth like violently. He goes, what is that? And then my wife says to me, well, you know, your dad's going to talk to you when you get home. And she says to me, you know, when we get home, we're going to have to talk. So yeah, we're all having this thing at the same time. Like if we all took drugs, or if we all had an allergic reaction to some kind of medication, we wouldn't have the exact hallucination at the same time, you know what I mean? Absolutely. You can ask any psychiatrist in this world. Two people are not going to have exactly the same thing, because we could be eating dinner and then we could hear him crushing those steps. And then I would walk over there it was like almost not even going to say what we all knew what it was, but we just didn't want to talk about it. You know what I mean? Then my wife would say to me, you know, you got to go to our church, and we're going to have this house like a priest give an exorcism here. And I was like, Lillian, you know, Jonathan, I don't really. I'm not, you know, I don't know what to do about that. And I don't want to go over to the church. We know this church people for like 20 something years. Every spring we have like a garden party in the back, and the priests come and the person is come, and they're very friendly with us. They come here for meetings. The priests have dinners here. Now I'm going to go over there and tell them I think, you know, we're crazy or something, or we think the house is possessed. I just couldn't do that. So I just thought maybe this thing will go away. Right, Jonathan? So that's what I was hoping for. Just like as a guy, I was just hoping maybe this is going to pass. You know what I mean? And my wife was saying, look, I don't think I could stay here. I'm going to have to live at the beach house if you don't do something about this. And I'm like, I don't know what to do about it. And I don't know if I want to ask a priest to do an exorcism here. So anyway, what I normally do is, like I said, I sit on the couch in the afternoon and I say my meditation. I'm a Catholic, so I say prayers on a rosary. So I have the sectional couch. Right next to me is a glass table with a lamp on it, like most people have. And I put my rosaries down there. So that this particular day, I said my prayers, I put my rosary down, thinking, just like a normal day, thinking, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to maybe get something to eat. And then suddenly, Jonathan. Now, the first thing I want to tell you is, like, I never invited this thing in the house. I never had a seance. I never used a Ouija board. I never used tarot cards. I don't suggest anybody does that. I mean, because once I think you allow this creature in your house, he'll do you some harm, I think. I mean, you're permitting him to do like the worst if you open the door for this thing to come in. I never did that. So I'm sitting on my sectional couch, and I was praying. And suddenly, on my right, between the glass table and the living room wall, the air starts to ripple a little bit. Just like, you know, if you took a rock and you threw it into water, and you see that rippling effect. And I thought I was having like a spasm or something, so I was blinking my eyes, you know, thinking it's just an eye problem, I would think. Then from that whole area of the living room starts to ripple and starts to turn into a that whole wall in the middle of nowhere, really, in the middle of the living room, starts to turn into a raging blue fire. And that's right, I said blue fire. I've never seen or heard anything like this before. So every time I look into a book or something with devils, they're always red and the fires are red and they're running around with a pitchfork or something like that. But this was a raging blue fire. And I sat on the edge of this chair and I was looking at it, and all of a sudden, this big blue raging wall of fire, I thought was something slowly was coming through it. And I thought for a minute it was like coral, you know, like you see it when you're snorkeling, you see those long strands of coral. Mm-hmm. So I see coral coming in like very slowly. And it's coming in very slowly into the living room. So right through this blue fire. So I get up off the chair and I stood in front of it, a few steps away from it. I backed up a little bit. And these long, what I thought was coral, when the full head of it came through, it was these like horns coming out of its forehead. And finally, this whole head emerges through the blue wall of fire. And it is blue too. That's another thing that's unfathomable, because can't explain why. I'm going to give you an idea why this fire was blue to begin with. So I'm standing there, and this creature and his full head is there, but it kind of stops there. It stops right there. But I just want to ask you a question real quick. Jonathan, have you ever go to a board meeting? And all the subordinates come in, they get there early, they're messing with their notes, they're messing with their fidgeting with their tie and their skirts, and they're looking through their notes. And then the CEO walks in, and he comes in like he owns the place. Well, mm-hmm. That's how this creature came through that blue flame. And it looked like what something you might imagine as a hierarchy demon in some kind of chain of command that exists only in hell. So it only comes to its head and a tiny bit of its neck, and it seemed like it couldn't pass any further than that, which it kind of left me a little bit at ease. The top of the head looked like a shell or a horseshoe crab, you know, hard and bony, and that's where all these horns were coming out of. That's why I say this. I think this was a gift, because it came only up to its neck, and it didn't look like it could pass through those blue flames. So now I'm standing there, I think that it didn't come in. Like most of the time on television, when you see an apparition comes in like with lightning and wind, chairs are flying around, it's roaring with some kind of animal noises. It didn't. And when I say this is the antithesis of any kind of an apparition I think I've ever heard or read about, it came in like that because I think it probably knew it would scare me right out of the house. And it did want to say a couple things to me. So I didn't. It was like intelligent and powerful and smart, and it wasn't acting like you normally see on TV, you know. So it comes all the way up to its head, and it's now I'm standing up, and it's staring straight at me like confrontationally, not like, you know, when two men kind of talk, they kind of talk on an angle to each other. But this thing was strict, just totally looking me straight in the eye. Its eyes were just black. It didn't have like pupils or anything like that. All I could see is black. But I know it was staring straight at me. So, and this creature was like, when we talk about the fourth dimension, now we have, you know, length, width, height, time. That's what we're in, the fourth dimension in this universe that we're in. This thing was able to manipulate a fifth dimension, like that's the kind of power it has. We don't have that kind of power. Humans don't have that kind of a power. So it was able to do that. It was able to come through. And now I'm standing there. And like I said, it didn't want to scare me out of the house. It just stood there looking at me. So now I'm looking at this creature. And I'm trying to burn this image into my head because I knew if I kind of lived through this, I'm going to want to, because I am an artist. So I was studying this head and this wall of flames. And the funny thing, the thing about the wall of flames is like most of the time when you have a wall of flames, you hear it burning something and you see smoke coming off it. You hear like whatever fuel is burning, but not this. This had no sound to it. It wasn't burning anything. When I became to realize this is God's burning detestation for sin that this creature is in. And now, and when you know, like, Jonathan, have you visited me in a prison somewhere and I didn't do the crime? And you came to visit me, or anybody came to visit me, first thing I would say is like, I didn't do this. I don't belong here. Get me out of here. This creature didn't do anything like that. For this creature, he owned the space he was in. For him, it was just this chastisement of that blue flame that he was in. For him, it was just. He seemed like he deserved the punishment. Like it just didn't even faze him that he was in a wall of flame. The blue flame again, because I can't explain that either. So
he's here.
Go ahead.
I can explain it. The blue is actually the hottest flame there is. It's actually quite interesting that you mentioned it a couple of times so far. Blue is fire cannot burn any hotter than blue. That's the hottest it can go. So there you go.
Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right about that. And the fact that the other thing that's unfathomable is like, okay, it had a face, and you would think if you're in a raging fire, face would be burnt, like burnt meat, or, you know what I mean? But it was face was fine. Like what you see, that picture that I drew and painted about this thing, his face was fine. Like it wasn't burning. That's another thing. Like when I say unfathomable, I don't know why it wouldn't be. His face seemed fine. I mean, I told you the top of his head looked like a walnut or something like that. That's where all the horns were coming out of. His face looked fine. It had lips and a pointy nose, and it was blue. So I can't explain that either. It was blue. So now it's standing there right in front of me. It's not trying to chase me out of the house. And it starts to speak. When you're face to face with something like a person or something like that, you kind of watch it. I never took my eyes off it. I never said a word to it, but I was watching the thing's lips move. And its first thing it said to me was no more. And I was thinking, I didn't want to answer it or even ask him what that meant, but I could see right away that his lips wasn't speaking English, but I was hearing English. Whatever language this creature speaks, or wherever it comes from, like in this chastisement of hell, I guess, they have their own language here, but they know how to, they have the power to make me understand what it was saying. So I was thinking, like he said, no more. I was thinking to myself, what does it mean? No more praying, no more trying to save souls from going to hell. And I was thinking, that must be what he must be talking about, because I believe now that these creatures, these souls that die in that terrible state of not loving God and not giving God 2 minutes of its time, especially if you leave this earth, like this thing was 100% hatred. Like I said, not 99.9, 100% hatred. And I tell people now, don't leave this planet hating your brothers or sisters or your neighbor, any race, religion, nationality. Get that out of your heart, because this creature is, that's what this creature is. He built his dynasty. His empire is built on hatred. So just, you know, get that out, because that's one of the things that's going to be a big problem for you after you walk into, like I said, you're going to be walking to that fifth dimension. as a spirit, and this creatures like this are going to be there waiting, especially if you didn't have any time for God in your life. So I said no more. So I was kind of understood that. I was this big, you know, roaring fire that was there. I was kind of looking at it, him and it, and it said to me, this fire will only affect your spirit. So that made a lot of sense to me because I didn't feel a heat of it. You know what I mean? And I'm standing like I was only a few feet away from it. So I could understand what that meant. That it's only going to this, you know, because we have fire. Our fire here in this like fourth dimension of this universe is like a miracle in itself. If you think about it, you cook with it, keeps you warm. You forge two different steels together. That third steel is even more stronger than the two steels that you forge together. This thing was a miracle in itself too, because it was something that's probably going to be there forever. I would say forever. And it's not burning anything. It's just, like I said, God's detestation for sin. And so it said, this fire will only affect your spirit. So I was all right with that. I was all right with the fact that it seemed like it only could come through as far as his head, that couldn't really pass all the way through. I was fine with that too. I was kind of happy about that. That's why I could tell people this was like a gift. It wasn't like, you know, something that was, I would really actually learn something from this. So now I know I'm watching his lips. It's not saying the words that I'm hearing. I know his face is fine. It's not being burnt up by this flame. I guess because it's going to be there forever. So it wouldn't be like, it looks like it's, you know, when you're reading the Bible, you hear about these angels, these bad angels that were thrown out of heaven. They were able to convince a third of the angels to follow it into its own empire now. I kind of believe that now. I never believed that before. I wasn't sure about devils, you know. I mean, I heard about them and I see them in books, but now I am so positive now. It's 100% positive. So I tell people, don't leave this planet with hatred in your heart that weighs you down. It's no good for you even when you're here for your physical health. And you can only fly if you take yourself lightly. So just don't leave here with hatred in your heart. And so then this creature says, I am many and many more wicked than I. So I'm thinking, is this maybe I kind of took this as like a threat. Like maybe this is my first encounter with this thing. And if I don't stop, like I said, no more. Like if I don't stop praying, these souls heading in his direction, they want them badly. I don't know why. I mean, I heard that, you know, in the Bible that they get even with God that way or something like that. Well, why do they want these souls so badly? I'm not sure. So I said, I am many and many more wicked than I. And it chose every single word with fastidious care. So I'm trying to tell people this creature is intelligent, powerful, can manipulate a dimension. Nothing like we can do. It was created back before time began. Not like a baby. It wasn't born a baby. It was born in his glory. You know, whatever God did back then, these things were powerful and beautiful, but they wanted to break away from God for some reason. I don't know that reason either. And why it's so, it became hate. I didn't understand that. We as spirits, we're going to have to become as hateful as this creature is to get even go in there with him, because you're not going to be able to live with this creature and this chastisement and be like happy and jovial and drinking and smoking and all those things you like to do here. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to become a creature like this. And they're so smart that when you die, you're going to be just yourself. You're not going to have any support. It's just going to be you. You're going to be you. And this creature, especially if you never gave God 2 minutes of your time, and this thing is going to be with your spirit. It's so intelligent. It has many wiles and deceptions. I could see that, you know. It knows how to seduce and entice, beguile your soul once you finally get there. And I think it's prepared to offer you a lot of interesting options once we're there. Don't let me forget to tell you what it did before it left. So I'm here with this creature now. It didn't want to scare me out of the house. It wanted me to, you know, stop praying. I said, no more. I guess stop praying for the souls. It kind of like, I thought it was like a threat. I did understand now more about that blue flame, that it would only affect my spirit. I could understand that because it wasn't affecting me. Like if I was that close to a wall of fire, I would feel the heat, but I didn't feel any heat. And I didn't hear anything or see any smoke like burning off from the flames. Like there was something, I guess it's, you know, I say this is unfathomable, but I guess in hell you wouldn't add more wood to it. Nobody would do that. So it has to be God's like miracle of chastisement. You know what I'm saying? That only God could create this and let it burn forever. Without even having to add like fuel to it or something like that. So I learned a lot about this in the matter of time that was there. So it was very interesting. Don't let me forget this. Tell you what it did before I left. So it told me that it looked at me totally confrontational the whole time. It spoke in a way. It had lips and it had a pointy nose like I painted in that picture. It had all these horny things coming out from the top of his head, like more than you normally would, we would think it would be like a hierarchy, devil, you know, when they have all these, a lot of horns coming out, I would think that would be a symbol of its rank or something like that. It was 100% hatred. It looked like it would love to just, all those horns coming out of his forehead, looked strong as a lion. It looked like it would just love to just, you know, just ram me into the wall with those horns if it had a chance. And that's how much it was, 100% hatred. It wouldn't have any problem with doing that. So that's what I was learning. So, I'm standing there. I don't know what to do, to be honest with you. I didn't want to talk to it. I didn't want to have a conversation with it or even have an argument with it. You know, either way, I just didn't want to do that. So I just, I just waited to see what next was going to do next. And it's like the whole time just confrontationally staring me straight in the eye. It never took its eyes off my eyes. And I'm looking at the blackness of eyes. It was something there, but it wasn't pupils. It was just black. And it was, and its face was blue and it couldn't come through that fire. So it looks down at my rosaries that I have on. That I was just praying on. I put him on the table and it's not that far from where his head is. And he looks back at me. The first time he took his eyes off me and he says, his face started to blow up. And I was wondering what now? And it looked back at the rosary and this was totally three dimensional. It wasn't like transparent. You know what I mean? It was totally just like if I was standing right in front of you. It was totally there and three dimensional. Because I saw this big saliva come from its mouth right onto my rosaries. And I guess that was his detestation for anybody who prays. I guess that's what it was trying to tell me. I was like, don't do that anymore. You know, don't try to save souls anymore. Then it just stood looking at me again and didn't say a word about that. It was almost like there's nothing you could do about that. You know, it's just like he's going to do whatever he wants right there. He could even spit on my rosaries if he felt like it. Then he just sort of like, as the way he came in, like he owned the place, is the way that he slowly backed into that blue wall of flames. I never really got to see past it, which I was kind of curious about a little bit in a way, to see what was back there. But maybe it's, I don't know, I'll be honest with you, it's all blue flames everywhere. I don't know, they have to exist in this forever. It's such a mind-boggling thing to think that somebody on, like one of us will have to actually go in. I mean, my religion teaches us that people fall into hell like snowflakes from the sky, especially if there's nobody to pray from. That's why I started praying for these people because I thought they didn't have a chance the way they lived. They lived like a ship without a rudder in the night and then whatever wind and tide took them wherever they just did any of that. They didn't care anything about the spiritual world. That there's really a spiritual world. It's so there. And the other thing that really struck me was, I never knew where hell was, Jonathan. I don't know if it's under the universe or wherever, who knows where it is, but it was, this thing was able to, like, it was kicked. I always thought, you know, this demons were kicked out, these bad angels were kicked out of heaven and became demons and they had to go to hell. So if they're in hell, why do they roam in the earth? But this creature, he brought hell with him. He never really left hell. He was in hell, but he was able to create a dimension, you know, something that we're incapable of doing and still get its message across and still be in hell at the same time. So that kind of made sense to me. So this was another thing that was, it's unfathomable, but it's real. So then, as I said, it backed out as slowly as it came in, and then it looked, it was staring me straight in the face right after that horrible thing to my rosaries. And I was still trying to burn this image into my head of what it looked like, what it said. Then it backed out a little bit, and then finally it passed into the flames. Then those flames started to dissipate little by little, and then it went back to the actual rippling of in the air, and then finally it disappeared. So, and I was standing there thinking, I was looking at my rosaries, thinking this creature spit on my rosaries, and I'm trying to think to myself, I have to remember every single second of this thing because I'm going to have to write this down, and I'm going to have to draw this thing because I am an artist, so I can capture this. And I kept touching my rosaries, like pushing them a little bit with my finger, thinking that there should be a big thing of saliva. I saw it happen, but it wasn't there. I don't know how to explain that. When I say these things are unfathomable, that's one of them. So it finally goes, and so I'm thinking, you know what, I'm this whole time with all these noises and stuff, I wasn't positive. Now I'm absolutely positive there's a creature here. So I'm thinking to myself, how can I get rid of this thing? And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, in the Bible, Jesus teaches me you could heal the sick, raise the dead, and expel demons in my name. So I was like, you know, I'm going to try that. So next morning I went to church. I'm a Catholic, so I received communion. So I come home. My wife keeps a thing of holy water in the kitchen. So I take the holy water, and in every single room, I say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave this house immediately. So I go to every single room, downstairs, in the basement, in the furnace room, in every single closet, in the attic, in every bedroom. And when I get to the last bedroom, Jonathan, I'm saying, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave this premises immediately, and I'm throwing the holy water. And right by the curtains and the shades, started like a whoosh, like that. They moved, and it was like a whoosh, and it was gone. So I couldn't, like, I'm telling you this story now. I couldn't say this for a while. I couldn't, like, when my wife came home, she kept saying, we got to do something about this. And I tell my wife, it's gone. So she would say, how do you know that? And I said, you're just going to have to trust me. It's gone. And when I tried to tell her what happened, I couldn't, the words locked up in my throat, and I couldn't tell her. So I said, you know what? I'm going to draw it, and I'm going to type this out on the computer. And that's when you're going to have to learn what happened. So that's what I started doing. And she was watching me draw it, and she would come in and say, is that what it looked like? And I said, yeah, like that. Well, what happened? And I couldn't say it. And I said, you're going to have to just read this when I'm done. So I had to type this all out before I was able to actually, even I have a hard time today just trying to tell this story. You know, it's still so present in my mind, about this apparition that I had. So then when I finally got every single detail typed out, like the book, if you go to john-egan.com, it's a 350-page book. It's an e-book. You hit a couple buttons and you can have it right immediately right into your phone or your computer. And so that was the only way. When I finally typed this all out on paper, then I was able to tell her little bits at a time, and I would tell her to read it, and then she would read it and say, then this happened? And I would say, yes, that happened. And then this happened? And I'd say, yes, and then that. And it was a blue flame. I'd say, yeah, well, you know, that was it. Then finally now, after I could finally talk about it, you know, in a sensible way. But in the book, it's down to every single detail in there. So that was really an experience that I never expected to happen in my life, but it happened. And there hasn't even been a bump in the night for like over a year now since this happened.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, John. I really am. And you know, the investigator in me always wants to look at that picture. I have been staring at this picture the entire time out of the corner of my eye this entire interview. And let me tell you, it's pretty unsettling when I look at it. It is by far one of the creepiest pictures I've ever seen in my life. And there's something very unsettling about it that just, ugh.
The thing is, it's so real. That's what I think is so unsettling about it. That there's no question in my mind now. Like I said earlier to you, I was a little skeptical myself about, you know, things that I hear, things that happen. But I'm so 100% positive. And I just want people to know that. Like these people that I told you that I met in my life who had no care in the world, you know what I mean, for God. I mean, I even have nephews who are who were brought up in the same kind of family atmosphere into our religion. But I have a couple of nephews that moved to New York, and people convinced them to be atheists. They took their love for God away and their faith in God away, and now they're staunch atheists. And I tell people, you know, and then I have other nephews who are heroin addicts. People came and told them that, you know, heroin was a good thing. They persuaded them that heroin was good. You know, it's so many, there's people in the world who can actually do this much persuasion to you. Could you imagine with this creature who was created much more powerful than we are, who have all these powers, what's going to happen to you when you're, you know, faced with this creature, and you're going to be like that all alone. It's just going to, you're not going to have lawyers around. You know what I mean? To try to help you out through this thing. It's going to be you and these creatures there. And I, like I said earlier, they could bewitch your spirit. They have many wiles and deceptions. You know, they could really seduce and entice you. To convince you, they're going to show you their empire built on hatred, especially if you have hatred in your heart when you leave here. They're going to show you their empire. That's what they do. They're going to show you how to alleviate all your pain with hatred. You know what I mean? That's the thing that they do. They use that hatred constantly, and they're going to have to do that for eternity. And that's what you're going to have to do if you wind up in a situation like that. So, like, if we could just convince one person or one of your listeners to just to, you know, maybe rethink their life. I tell people, go back to whatever religion you have, just go back to it. And find out what's the fastest way that they tell you to get to God, and just start doing that. You know what I mean? And just keep God in your life. You're supposed to keep him number one in your life, because he doesn't care how much money you have or how many possessions you have. As long as he's number one and you keep him number one, he's not going to have any problem with you. And then when you die, you're not going to be going to some creature like this that's sitting there waiting to snare you. You know what I mean? And if you have a very weak spirit, that's going to be a big problem in that fifth dimension that we don't really understand yet, but they have total control over.
One thing I've noticed just from observing the picture myself, of course, the one that you drew of this being, this thing that's coming out of his head, you mentioned it kind of looks like coral. Like, is any way that might be his crown?
That's what I'm saying. Thinking like this is his, like he's in hierarchy angel. And that would be like his, you know, his symbol in this chastisement or wherever he comes from, or his rank or something like that. When you think, that's what I would think. Like I said, it was when it was coming through that blue flame, it just was coming very slowly. And the first thing I could think of is, I mean, I don't know why I thought it looks like coral to me. You know what I mean? I kind of knew what was going to happen, but I kind of didn't know what was, I knew this was it. I knew what all these noises were in the house and all this creature that was scaring me, my wife, and my son. I knew this is the pinnacle of it. This is it. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. But then I said, like I tell you, it was like a gift in a way, because it couldn't hurt me. And I tell people, don't invite this thing in ever, because you're inviting it to now do what could it really do to you if it wanted. You know what I mean? I don't think it was allowed to come through all the way. That's how it looked like to me. That's what made it me feel like not running out of the house. You know what I mean? And it didn't want me to leave. It wanted me to stay right there so it could communicate whatever it was supposed to communicate with me. So that was the interesting part about this.
Yeah, makes you wonder, were those flames where he was from, or were those flames keeping him back? You know, many people have talked about blue, the color blue, as a warding symbol. And there's actually many cultures out there have talked about blue flame as part of that barrier that separates this world from the next. So very, very interesting stuff. John, what a wonderful conversation. I will say it's been very, very unsettling, to say the least. I highly recommend anybody who's going to listen to this podcast to look at this creepy, creepy cover of your book, Between Love and Hate, The Devil is Real. He is Plotting to Get Your Soul and Will Succeed with Many, by John H. Hagen. Johnny Giganzari. It is going to be an awesome time for all you guys that are celebrating Halloween. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast. John, anything you want to say to my listeners before we head off into the sunset here, so to speak?
Yeah, well, the other thing is, John Dash, is a little dash between John and Egan. So John Dash Egan, because my son is John Egan. He says he gets thousands of emails all the time. And he said, tell him it's Dash. And I do tell everybody the dash in between. But he has to forward them to me. So, but it's John Dash Egan. The book is 350 pages. It's an e-book right now. It teaches you how to live. It teaches you how to know thyself. It teaches, so many people they felt that past this didn't know themselves. They didn't know what their talents were. They didn't know where they were good at and what they were bad at. You know, this book teaches you that. It teaches you, you're going to actually find happiness in this book. You're going to actually treat yourself to the unknown, to learning what the unknown is about. It was so real. That's why there's so many details in this book that people read and then they write me and they say, what was this? And I think that might have been this. And so I enjoy that a lot. So this book is a wonderful thing, I think, for people.
Well, thank you so much, John, for taking the time, and hope to hear from you again. I'm hoping to get you on for Valentine's Day. I'm making the invite now live on air. I want to have you come back because, well, there's two other things you're known for as well besides this book. And, one was a best-selling book. What was the name of it?
How to Pick Up or Get Dates with Beautiful Women in Nightclubs or Any Other Place, Secrets Every Man Should Know by John Egan. That's everywhere. That's on Amazon. But like I said earlier, once you sell like hundreds of thousands of books, everybody wants to get in there in front of you and sell it for half price and a third of, you know what I mean? So, I don't know why Amazon does that, but a lot of it now is ebook. Ebooks are good. They can't steal that. So that's another good thing.
And that's not all you're known for. You're also an artiste, so to speak. One of the most iconic pictures from the Ripley's Vault belongs to John Egan. And it is, well, that's you explain true. It because I couldn't believe you were the artist. I was like, whoa, really?
Yeah. I always had the ability to paint and draw and sculpt things. God gave me this little talent, you know. So I thought when I retire, I'll get back into my artwork a lot more. But my wife was in charge of the Adoration Chapel at the church. And at the Adoration Chapel, when they put Jesus in the monstrance, they burn candles. When the candles burn down to a certain point, 2 or 3 inches, they're supposed to throw them out. So for years, my wife, I didn't realize she was keeping them. So I saw her in the basement, like boxes, and I looked in and I said, it's all boxes of like 2 or 3 inch candles. What are you doing with those? I said to her. She goes, no. Hey, those are candles that keep Jesus company. I didn't have the heart to throw them out. She goes, you're an artist. Why don't you do something with them? And I was thinking, yeah, that's true. Yeah, these candles are special. Yeah, let me think about that for a minute. I was thinking, I melted them all down. It was like a 50-pound block. And I was thinking, these candles, since they kept Jesus company, maybe they should take on the image of Jesus. So I dug out the wax and came out to a beautiful bust of Jesus. It was so beautiful that they asked me to bring it to the church. So I bring it to the church. So newspapers came over and they wanted to interview me. So then all these newspapers started interviewing me about this thing. And it got so big. Oh, the secular world was so, appreciative of this. I never thought they would be. It keeps going and going. It's a beautiful, gorgeous bus. It's actually at johndashegan.com. One of the pages there is a bus. So finally, Ripley's, believe it or not, they want it. They want to buy it. And I'm like, it's not for sale. So it's in their 2018 edition of Ripley's Believe It or Not. And I wasn't going to sell it to them. They wanted to put it in one of their museums. So I was like, no, you want it? It's $1 million if you want to put it in, because I'm not selling it right now. They call me back 2 or 3 times. They never come near that price, but they still try. They try. So then one other real quick thing was, my wife usually answers the phone for people to do interviews or for anything. And so she goes to me while the newspapers were covering this, she goes, the big boys are on the phone for you. I go, who's the big boys? She goes, USA Today. I go, yeah, that's the big boys. You're right. So I was so happy that they wanted to do, they did a, like in USA Today, I thought maybe they can put a little note in there about, they did one full page of this bust of Jesus and how it was made and me and some other books that I've written. So I was really thought that was nice that USA Today, which is like the first thing you hear on every USA Today said this or USA Today, that's the authority all over the world. So I was really happy that a full page in that. So that was really nice of them. But I still haven't sold it to Ripley's, believe it or not. So,
well, I absolutely adore Ripley's. When we went to Florida a few years ago, me and my family, I actually said right away, oh my God, can't wait to go to Disney World, but when are we going to Ripley's, believe it or not?
Yeah, that's right.
And absolutely. They fill their walls with different artwork made from strange or bizarre mediums. I mean,
yeah.
We're looking at gigantic pictures of Michael Jackson made of belly button lint. It's just nuts.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
They thought this was, they said this was the only kind the world ever created this way from these adoration candles. And it was a beautiful bust of Jesus, too, at the same time. That's why they wanted it. That's how they toted it in the book, the 2018 edition of Ripley. If you get that book, you'll see that's in there, too. I'm in there somewhere.
I actually happen to have the 2018 edition of Ripley's, believe it or not. It's a blue cover with an eyeball on the front of it, folks. You can't miss it at your local Walmart.
I didn't get that one yet, but somebody told me it was in there. But I don't know if I know they're a little niffed with me because I wouldn't sell it to them. You know what I mean? But I know it's in there, but I don't know where. But I didn't look. But I know they're still thinking I'm going to sell it to them. But I love looking at my artwork, so I don't really want to sell it. I've sold posters of my paintings throughout the years, but I never sold the actual paintings. I can't part with them. You know, it's better to sell the posters anyways. Nicer that way, I think.
Yeah, I think that sculpture should just. Give it to the church. Let them have it.
Well, they want it. Believe me, they want it. What I do is they ask me a lot. Actually, a lot of churches now are sending me all their used candles.
Oh, nice.
So that's nice, too, because I'm going to eventually do something much bigger than that.
Now, John, we both know that you've got quite a lot of fame behind you, and you have this gift, and you've done something like this that became so iconic. Like, millions of people have seen have seen pictures of that bust. So
I know, it's amazing.
Could this be the reason why well, we're not going to say he's the devil himself, but this might be one of his demons. Do you think that might be one of the reasons why he came to you and told you to stop?
Yeah, that could be true, if you think about it, because I do have a really great artwork in my mind for these candles, you know. That's going to be it's going to be a lot bigger than this. Maybe that could very well be, because I've been thinking about this for a long time. They use all these candles that all these churches are giving me. But I do bring the bus to church when they want me to. I bring it over there, but I have to stay with it. I can't just leave it there, you know. It's under glass and everything like that. But when I bring it to a church, I stay there and I talk to the people. It's wonderful how they get around it, and they take pictures of it, and they ask me questions, and they treat it like a museum piece. You know, it's just so nice that this bus touches so many people. That's a wonderful thing. It really is.
I mean, in my world, I look at it and I'm just like, well, I mean, if the devil's going to get in contact with you must be a very important person. You must have a very important, like absolutely. There must be something you are doing in this world that they don't want you to do. So there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
John,
I think
once
you're
again,
right.
Thank you so much. You've been just an amazing guest, and we hope to have you back on again sometime soon, okay?
Yeah, you were a great, amazing host, Jonathan. And, you know, I've been interviewed by the great ones, Howard Stern, and I can mention so many people. You know, when Howard Stern interviewed me, he had 14 million listeners back then. So you were just as good as he is, believe me.
Well, you know, I probably won't pull any hijinks, you know. I can see if Howard Stern was talking to you about that bust, oh, my God, he'd probably offer you $1 million. So
that's true. Yeah, that's right. But he's got it. That's for sure.
Howard, just to let you know, if you're listening to this by some miracle of God, please bring back your show. We're bored to death.
Actually, he's on the Sirius satellite, right?
Yeah. But you know, Sirius, it's like, it's like that veil you kept talking about, but it's for radio.
Yeah, it's different.
It's very different. And it caters to a very specific type of person.
That's true.
Not so much for me. Sirius, oh, God, Sirius satellite is horrible here in Newfoundland. Like, you can't hear it at all.
That's not right? Oh, man.
And I love
podcasts, that, huh?
too. And, like, I'm, like, a huge fan of, like, the bigger ones. But, you know, that's it. That's all you could do. Good old-fashioned Podbean app for me. What can I do?
Yeah, right?
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.